JC Corcoran Podcast.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
I'm in New York in my office where people wear clothes because it's cold, while you're at a bar in Miami watching bimbos walk by in bikinis. I never look at other men because I have you. You look at bimbos in bikinis, do you have to? I don't like Miami. There's too much flesh out of control. When someone's boobs are in your face, how can you see their soul? Okay, right. And then it's like, lust is rampant, and all I see are bikinis and bimbos on MTV and Playboy and commercials on streets everywhere. You'd have to be blind not to notice them. They're blind. Hey, if you were blind, our love could work. So I think I'll just get a knife and stab your eyes out. But I don't want you to be blind, because then you couldn't see me. So I guess I'll have to just go to a gym and work out real hard and buy a bikini. I'll buy a bikini.
My goodness.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all? It's like deja vu all over again.
You know, it didn't occur to me until after the podcast yesterday, when I did the story about women shaving their faces. This apparently is a new trend, and apparently there's also some dermatological benefits for women doing this. Like, I guess there's exfoliation that takes place and stuff like that. You can't get this information just anywhere, folks, but on the JC Corcoran podcast. It is the 21st of April, 2021, by the way. Welcome. But after I did the podcast yesterday, it occurred to me I had once interviewed Jane Seymour. I want to say it was late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there. She had done some movie. I can't even remember. I'd have to look it up. And I'm sitting 3 feet from her, and I remember thinking to myself, what is the deal with your face? She was very, very nice. She was very, very pretty. But I'm telling you, she had a significant, noticeable, distracting amount of peach fuzz all over her face and her chin. I'm sitting there trying to do the interview with her, and I just wanted to blurt out, what's the deal with your face? Then I remember coming back and telling that story on the air, and people didn't believe me. There's a lot of people who really, really look good on camera, but then when you see them in person, it's like, wow, hair, makeup, lighting, apparently it makes a big difference, doesn't it? All right, how you doing, kids? I don't know what to tell you. By now, you've heard the story, you've heard the analysis, you've heard the analysis of the analysis, and by now you've probably had your fill. You know what you think, you know why you decided to think what you think. I don't have any brilliant additional insight, but yes, yesterday St. Louis had snow. I had people sending me messages all day yesterday going, the Schnucks panic aisle is open. It's like, hey, that's my line. And also, we had a lot of hamster-sized snowflakes coming down. Thank you, Dave Murray. No, obviously, we're talking about the verdict yesterday. 6 white, 4 black, 2 multiracial. Pretty good split of men versus women. Let me just tell you, when lawyers are just sitting around talking, and I have a lot of friends who are lawyers, my closest friend, the guy who I would trust not only my life, my career, my family, all that sort of stuff, my friend Jeff Gershman, who's been my manager and lawyer and all sorts of stuff for over 3 decades, my buddy Scott Sherman, lots of people, lots of names that you would recognize. When these lawyers sit around, well, let me put it this way. When athletes who are retired sit around, they talk about the day they went 6 for 6. Politicians sit around talking. They talk about the race that they just barely won. When old men are sitting around, they talk about some woman they had when they were 18 years old. But when lawyers sit around and they're just talking, you know what they talk about? Goofy juries and the mistakes, in a lot of cases, they made dealing with people who are sitting in that jury box who do something completely bizarre. And I probably heard people say this, various commentators say this a million times yesterday, getting 12 humans to agree on anything is almost impossible these days. Plus, in this particular case, you're dealing with 12 people who weren't smart enough to know they could move away from Minnesota. Good morning, everybody. I was telling my 11-year-old daughter last night, when you grow up, you're going to be able to tell your kids, your grandkids, what you remember about this day, because they're going to be teaching this in schools 50 years, maybe even 100 years from now. You don't know. And let's remember this. The officials up there in Minneapolis and Hennepin County, they tried to sweep this one under the carpet. They gave all sorts of reasons why this case was open and shut. And then the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, you saw him speak yesterday after the verdict was released and announced. Keith Ellison got a hold of this. He was the Attorney General and said, no, hold on, wait a minute. And that's why we have what we had yesterday. I don't care what kind of job you have. We all have restrictions placed on us that keep us from doing whatever we want. This phenomenon is commonly referred to as order. Although I will say I had a pretty good idea. If the verdict had gone the other way and Minneapolis just turned into one of those giant riot scenes, you could put out the fires with the My Pillows. Nobody wants them. Nobody wants them anymore. So now what? Now what? That's the question. When we have major events like this in this country that rock us as a civilization, a lot of politicians, a lot of movers and shakers, a lot of commentators make really, really good speeches. And then you know what we do? We make real good movies about what happened. Maybe even a song once in a while. And it makes us feel better. You know what else happens after that? Not a goddamn thing changes. So again, the question is, now what? And the only answer I have for you is, that's all I'm going to say about this today, and we're moving on.
The category, top 10 ways to make Major League Baseball playoffs more exciting. Ways to make Major League Baseball a little more exciting.
Even more exciting. Hmm? Huh? Even more exciting. Than it already
is. That's right. Number 10, play the games in Baghdad. Number 9, rig second base to administer severe electric shock. Number 8, no metal detectors at Detroit home games. Number 7. Goodbye chewing tobacco. Hello, tainted spinach. Number 6. Figure out a way to get that wacko Terrell Owens to play baseball. Number 5. Use the frozen head of Ted Williams for infield practice. Number 4. Come on. Between innings, blindfolded fans try to jab a needle in Barry Bonds' ass. Number 3. Fine A-Rod $1 million every time he chokes. Number 2. Allow players to cork themselves.
Whoops.
What? What?
Whoops.
What are we talking about? And the number one way to make Major League Baseball playoffs more exciting, center field Jumbotron shows steamy emails Mark Foley sent Bat Boys.
Well, there you go. Mark Foley. Oh, man. Was that a dated bit or what? Remember that guy? One of the reasons I played that is because one of the best movies ever made was released on this date in 1989. A completely unknown director by the name of Phil Alden Robinson. Despite being told by everybody in the business, you cannot make a movie out of this book. It's impossible. There's too many abstract images. You can't do it. He said, no, I think I can, and I'm going to Iowa. I'll see ya. And of course, that movie from 1989, Field of Dreams. I got 100 stories about the making of this movie, because they had the pleasure of sitting down and having a long couple of conversations with the director, Phil Alden Robinson. Also talked to Kevin Costner about this. I remember coming back from the movie in almost total silence. My fiance at the time was with me, and it wasn't until we got back to her apartment over in the Des Moines area where I just completely exploded into tears. To this day, I'm not exactly 100% sure why, but I also know I'm not alone. And a couple of years ago, they did the 30th anniversary stuff, and you had Bob Costas in there, and the director, and Kevin Costner, and everybody was like sharing stories. That doesn't happen every day, where a 30-year-old movie ends up, you know, with, you know, major, big-time specials all over television, including ESPN, with Bob Costas sitting there with these guys sitting there right there at the home plate at the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa. But I will say, out of all the stories I have, like the fact that when Shoeless Joe shows up for the very first time and Kevin Costner is out there in the fog throwing pitches to him, and Shoeless Joe's like, smack, smack, smack. And then Kevin Costner says, see if you can hit my curve. And he throws one, and you have the shot from behind home plate. And it's a line drive that literally knocks Kevin Costner off his feet. That was not in the script. That just happened, and they left it in the movie. But my favorite story by far has to do with the music from the movie. And here is director Phil Alden Robinson.
The music was so instrumental to creating moods and really kind of complimenting the film.
Yeah, it's beautiful. James Horner is a wonderful composer. And I'll just tell you a quick story. The first time that I showed the film to anybody who had not been, you know, privy to the dailies and the shoot was when I showed it to James, who is the composer. And at this point, this is in post-production. We had a rough cut of the film. I was very, very nervous. In fact, I really thought that it wasn't very good. And I just didn't know how to make it any better, and I just was throwing up my hands and saying, well, I guess this is all it'll ever be. And James came in to look at the picture to decide if he was going to score it. And I showed the film to him and his agent. And when the lights came up, the agent turned around and said, gee, Phil, it's really wonderful. I really like it. I said, oh, thanks very much. And I'm thinking, well, he's an agent. He's going to say these things, you know. And James didn't even turn around. And I'm talking to the agent, and James is still not turning around. And I'm thinking, oh, no, he hates it. And he's too embarrassed to turn around and even say, gee, thanks, but no thanks. And finally, the agent says, Jamie, what do you think? And without turning around, James said, would you excuse me for a second? And he got up and left. And I thought, oh, my God, this is just a disaster. He can't even say thank you. And the agent looks at me and he says, I'm sorry, I don't understand, I'm sorry. He goes out in the hall, comes back in a minute later, he says he's standing out there crying. And it was an electrical moment for me. And James came back in the room, wiping tears from his face, and he said, I'm speechless. And I said, gee, you don't have to say much, just say yes. And he said, yes. And that was the moment when I realized that we had something.
Man, oh man, Goosebump City right there. Director Phil Alden Robinson talking about the music from Field of Dreams. Well, we're sitting here doing a podcast. Meanwhile, the radio industry is dying a slow death. NPR and Edison Research, and that's a very well-known research company in the broadcast industry. A lot of credibility. They conducted a study on radio audiences and identified six different types of listeners. Listen carefully and find out which group you fall into. They found that approximately 156 million people listen to AM/FM radio daily. That's 63% of U.S. adults ages 18 and older. So that's still pretty good penetration, huh? 63% every day? Here's how it breaks down. Here's the six types. First one is radio heads. That's 9% of listeners. They listen for all audio needs and therefore listen to the radio most. Connection seekers, 16% of the audience. They listen for company and connection. Then you have infomaniacs. That's 18% of listeners. They listen for news and information. That's probably me. Then you got your rhythm rockers, 27% of listeners. They're listening for the music. Laid back listeners, 17%. They listen to radio only in the background. Then you have the habitualists, 13% of listeners. They listen to radio when it's the only option available. Obviously, with most terrestrial radio, advertising takes up a chunk of time and listeners are actually cool with it. 47% of listeners across all six types say that listening to ads is a fair trade-off to consume the free content. That's 47%. And 46% say they've even considered a new company, product, or service after hearing an ad on the radio. 41% of all time spent listening to audio by U.S. adults is on AM/FM radio, and 33% of AM/FM radio listeners say the platform is becoming a more important part of their lives, even with the growth in online audio or other options. And all that sounds really peachy, doesn't it? That 156 million 63% of adults 18 and older all listening to the radio. The only problem is 20 years ago, it was about 97%. So there are some issues. Got the Academy Awards Sunday, and somebody put together a list of 32 great movies that received zero Oscar nominations. Among them, the original King Kong back in 1933, Harold and Maude from 72, The Shining got nothing. That was 1980. In 92, Reservoir Dogs got nothing. Groundhog Day in 93 got nothing. And The Big Lebowski in 98 got nothing. The Sacha Baron Cohen movie has already set a Guinness World Record for the longest title of any nominated movie in history. It has 110 characters. The previous record holder was Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines, or How I Flew from London to Paris in 25 hours, 11 minutes, which was released in 1964. There are 85 characters there. Chadwick Boseman nominated posthumously, and it's only the eighth time that that's happened in 93 years. James Dean got a couple of those. Heath Ledger also. Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis could both win for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. The last time the winners of Best Actress and Best Actor from the same movie was 98. That was Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson for As Good As It Gets. Speaking of Viola Davis, she's up for Best Actress, but she's only on screen in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom for 26 minutes and 41 seconds. That means she actually appears on screen for less time than two of the supporting actress nominees, Maria Bakalova and Olivia Colman. Viola also got a Best Supporting Actress nomination in 2009 for Doubt. That was opposite Meryl Streep, and she was only in the movie for a single 8-minute scene. But, you know, they were showing Network the other night on Turner Classic Movies, and Beatrice Strait plays the soon-to-be ex-wife of the central character in the movie, and she had a very, very impactful scene, and I don't think she was in the movie maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and she got a Best Actress nomination for Network. Let's go over to TV. Ken Jennings has been the highest-rated Jeopardy co-host so far. Dr. Oz, the lowest. Anderson Cooper just started his 2-week stint at the podium on Monday. All right, late night tonight, Elizabeth Moss had a chance to meet her in the Wrigley Field press box a couple of years ago. Oh, Scientologists, man, I'm telling you, they may be nutty as a fruitcake, but they are fantastic interviews. Fantastic interviews. They never take their eyes off of you. They look deeply into your soul as you're talking to them. And this happened with her. It happened with John Travolta. A couple of other people I've interviewed are Scientologists. So I guess you'd say from a selfish standpoint, I like interviewing Scientologists. That's where it stops, though, by the way. We're done with the interview. Swish. I'm gone. Jimmy Kimmel's got George W. Bush and Maroon 5. Ed Helms on with Colbert. Cher, who was on with Colbert last night, is on with James Corden tonight. And Seth Meyers has Christine Baranski and Melissa Villaseñor from Saturday Night Live. The guy, the mastermind, the brain of all that meatloaf stuff back in, I guess it was, what, 79, 80, right in there, a songwriter by the name of Jim Steinman. He died on Monday, 73. He wrote the albums Bad Outta Hell and Bad Outta Hell 2. He also wrote hits for Celine Dion, Bonnie Tyler, and Air Supply. Michael Richards, the beloved Seinfeld character, being sued by a neighbor for cutting down her trees to get a better ocean view. And some of these trees were, I don't know, like 80, 90 years old. She's suing for $250,000 and then another $250,000 on top of it for emotional distress, lowering her property value, all those fun things out in Southern California. Birthdays today, retired Dallas Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo, 41. Andy McDowell, absolute sweetheart, met her a couple of times and interviewed her a couple of other times, and just sensational in Groundhog Day. Tony Danza, 70 today. Iggy Pop, 74. Charles Grodin apparently was always a lot older than we ever thought he was. I got to look this up in a minute and calculate how old he was when he did Midnight Run with Robert De Niro. But Charles Grodin, 86 today. And speaking of Minnesota, as we were at the top of the podcast, people are going to be going nuts up there today because it was in 2016 that Prince died from that accidental overdose of fentanyl. He was 57. I know there's a lot of people who think that Prince was a god, a musical genius. Pardon me if... Da, 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 boom, boom. Da, 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 boom, boom. Da, 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 boom, boom. For 4 minutes? To me, that doesn't make you a musical genius. And also, especially sort of later on in his career. And I don't like Springsteen doing this either. You go to a show and it says 8 o'clock, and you're like, okay, probably 8:15, maybe 8:20, maybe 8:30, but not 9:45 for an 8 o'clock show. And that's what Springsteen did the last time I saw him in St. Louis. Unless there's some sort of massive catastrophe backstage, I just think it's really disrespectful to your fans and to the audience. You know, people work. You got to get up and go to work the next day, and concert didn't even start till 9:45. No, thank you. And now this.
When a man meets the woman he loves, everything changes. His heart races, his head spins. And suddenly all the dozens and dozens of women he's sleeping with no longer matter. A few years ago, I found the woman I love, and I've put some of my feelings into this little ode. Every man needs a woman. And I need you to lift me when I am sad, to comfort me when I am down, to clean me when I am drunk, to walk beside me when I want to look like I am not gay. To walk in front of me when I need someone to act as a human windbreak. To kiss me when I am horny. To massage me when I am tense and or horny. To make me horny when I am not horny. And then to watch me fall asleep. I need you, darling, to clean between my toes when they are not clean to my satisfaction. To pick the nits out of my hair when I have head lice. To try milk for me when I am not sure of the expiration date. To be there when I need you to be there, and to be out of town the rest of the time. My darling, although it may seem sentimental, I want to take this moment to tell you I love you, because I don't want to lose half my stuff. Good night, my love.
Thank you, Mr. Steve Martin. All right, people ready to travel again. 67% of Americans planning to go on a summer trip. 53% will spend more on trips this year than last year. Limping on purpose was a popular trend in the mid-1800s in the UK. The Princess of Wales had rheumatic fever that gave her a limp, and because she was a huge fashion icon and trendsetter, other women started limping too. The only people who can legally bring switchblades into the United States are people who are missing an arm. And now you know. Study out of Portugal found the exact number of cups of coffee you should drink in a day is 5. That's the point where you'll be the most alert, and also your memory will be better and you'll learn stuff faster. So start throwing them back. I don't drink coffee. This is a little piece of Americana that has eluded me for my entire life. A new survey asked people if they'd rather have a good body as opposed to things like more money, a better love life, or a better work-life balance, and 28% say they'd rather have the great body. A new study out of the University of Michigan found we automatically make assumptions about men who wear shirts with big logos. We assume they get it on with more people, that they are harder to trust, that they're less reliable, and that they're not relationship material. This is if you come in walking into a bar or a restaurant with a big logo on your shirt. This is what people think of you. The researchers think it's because shirts that are really loud make us think of peacocks flashing their feathers. They're trying to get it on, not settle down. Cops in Sacramento kicked in a woman's door after she called 911 while hiding in her bathroom to report an intruder. But that intruder was actually her robot vacuum. Her son didn't want a vacuum, so he set up their old Roomba. Could this lady secretly be a vampire? A 55-year-old woman in Florida attacked her Uber driver from behind on Saturday, started choking him, and left a serious bite mark on his neck. He managed to pull over, and bystanders got her off of him. Sounds like she may have been drinking. Gosh, you think? She's facing two felony counts. A guy in Texas pulled a prank a couple of months ago where he wrote, "I got kidnapped," on a restaurant receipt, and the restaurant called the cops. The guy was arrested and charged with filing a false report. And a guy in California broke into a house a few years ago and watched porn on one of the laptops inside. The cops used the DNA from that laptop to track him down, and he was just sentenced to 6 more years in prison on 2 felony counts. And we may soon be able to use our phones to detect COVID. There's also a crazy rumor going around that some people may even start using their phone to talk. The world is coming to. And that's it. We're out of time. The, what is it? April 21st edition of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jconline.com is in the can. Please spread the word. Help us out. And we'll be back tomorrow morning, bright and early at 7. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.